In the spirit of gratitude and respect, we would like to acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional land we gather. Good morning. Welcome to our April 9th Sunday service. My name is Dar Garrow-Levy, and it is my honor to be serving as your worship associate this morning with Reverend Alan Tizek, our visiting minister. Reverend Al, as he is called by his street family, has been committed to his work on the streets for over 40 years. He is the founder of the Victoria Dandelion Society, and every morning at 5:30 a.m., he is out there with coffee, muffins, and any other warm supplies he has. While those who sleep outside wake to the sounds of an awakening city, Reverend Al is there to make sure that everyone has a safe and welcome start to their day. And he is here with us this morning to share some of his stories that he has witnessed. Welcome, Reverend Al. Today we gather to listen with a loving mind to stories about the homeless, and to remind ourselves of the humanity we share with those less fortunate than ourselves. For many, such a life is only one paycheck or one bit of bad luck away. It's so much easier to get there than it is to get back. And if it wasn't for people like Reverend Al and the Dandelion Society, many would disappear from our notice altogether. And so I invite Terry Ches, someone who has gone out into the wee hours of the morning with Reverend Al, to come forward and light our chalice, representing the flame of compassion that burns deep within each of us, and that which inspires our joint commitment to creating a better world for all. Thank you, Terry. And now Reverend Al Tizek will now share with us a story for all ages. It has something to do with a rope, so it should be very interesting.
Hi, everybody. Now, I think I have something over here. There it is here. I'm going to explain to you, but first thing we're going to do is we're going to have a tug of war. Who wants to have a tug of war with me? You will do? You want to have a tug of war? Oh, come on, have a tug of war with me. Okay, I'll do one first. Get this tug of war done. I should have undid this first, eh? The gentleman that gave it to me did it really nice, and he's going to get it all tied up. And he goes, okay, come on over here, down this line here. You get at the end of the... is there more children down there? Well, come on up here. Come on up here. You have to come up here. One guy first, right down that line. Go right down the end of that thing there. Here. Take this with you. Take the go. Okay, stop. Okay, now hold tight, eh? And the congregation are going to say, one, two, three, go.
One, two,
three, go. Pull. I think I won. Okay, that's good, that's good. That's a good one. Okay, who, do you want to join him? Okay, there's two. Grab a hold of it. You're going to grab a hold of it. Okay, now just a minute. The congregation, you can't pull until the congregation says three. Go. Okay, I think I won again. Okay, now we're going to get all of yous on. Come on, all of yous. Come on, all of yous. Everybody, all of you. Grab a hold of it. Okay. Okay. Grab a hold now. Just give me a... Oh, no. Even my friends are going to join me. Get the... No. We're going to lose here. Okay, one, two, three, go. Slow. Okay, you won. Come on back up. Good. That's what a church is like, eh? One person cannot form a church. Together we could do wonderful things. All of us together. Youth, young people, and adults. We gather together and we're able to move mountains. So you were able to beat me when you all got together. Thank you. You were really good. Thank you. And remember the story.
Shortly, Nick and the choir will lead us in singing hymn number 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life. I ask that you remain seated, and I invite you to make yourself comfortable. Place your feet flat on the floor if you're able, and to breathe in, breathe out, letting your body relax into itself and into this space with each breath. I find the words of this hymn to be particularly meaningful when I am in need of either comfort or inspiration. But I invite you to find your own meaning in them as you sing quietly along or close your eyes and hum or just listen, whichever you are inspired to do. After we sing, we will let the music fade and we'll enjoy a minute or so of silent reflection. Join me now in singing hymn number 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life. Let love be my legacy. A few years ago, while I was taking photographs downtown, I happened to gauge in conversation with a homeless man who I wanted to photograph. He was dirty and smelled of alcohol and was the type of person that any one of us might cross the street to avoid. He told me something about his life, about how he got to be pushing his belongings around in a shopping cart. Basically, he said that he couldn't deal with angry bosses yelling at him, and it all got to be too much for him. I could tell that he was a sensitive and vulnerable sort, and I could relate. He showed me a tattered picture that he carried with him in an inside shirt pocket to keep it dry. I don't quite remember what the photo was of, but what I do remember is that He thought it was the most beautiful place that he had ever seen. And he kept it with him to remind him that such beauty still existed in this world. His name was Trevor. And though I sometimes don't remember his name, I think of him often. And whenever I think of what it's like for those living on the street, I am reminded of our shared humanity and the connection I have had made with him that day.
I just had to tell the conductor there I'm not going to sing, not to worry. I just find the pulpit a little above contradiction, you know. So I'd like to have you down on the ground. I spoke here 7 years ago. So if you don't like what I'm going to say today, you probably won't have to put up with it for another 7 years. And it is a nice sunny day, and it's moving in towards afternoon, and people might be a little tired and yawning, and if you wish to sleep, please do. I'll keep on speaking until the last person falls asleep. A couple of weeks ago, I was speaking at an Anglican church, and I stopped into a McDonald's prior to the service, and there's a lot of people gathered. You know, there's a lot of people at McDonald's, and I spoke up in the line. I'm not shy, as you guess you noticed. I speak up in the line, and I said, well, years ago, we used to meet in a church, and we used to see all our neighbors at the church. Now we come to Tim Hortons, or McDonald's. And somebody else in the line said, yeah, and it's sort of the same thing because they offer coffee and they ask for money. Thank you for inviting me. A friend of mine's here, Jerry, and I'm not going to send him out particularly, but we go back a long, long way. And you'll notice I'm wearing First Nation made by Insuk by Edith Newman. And a tie. I am not First Nation. I am so white. You want to say that? So white. But since I came to the island now 30 years ago, people like Jerry have patiently taught me so much about First Nation, especially the Housit people. I have a special connection with the Housit. I have buried so many of their family over the years. And they have taught me just so much. So I wear this out of respect and hopefully always a willingness to learn a little more, to break the boundaries of my faith. And that's what I've done with my faith over the years, break down the boundaries rather than build around. I am not born again. I think Jesus Christ can take care of himself. I am more liberal in faith. And would follow closely around Spong, if you know him. I always like coming with a couple of books, you know, you might want to read. I love reading. And one of the books is called Silence by Shusaku Endo. Just remember the last name is Silence. It was a picture in town there for a couple of weeks. You know, 3 hours of suffering, so no one went and seen it except me. But anyway, he is really a great writer. And the other one is Christianity Must Change or Die by Spong. So either of those books I just leave to you. As you heard, I work on the street, and I've worked on the street here in Victoria for about 30 years. And for a while, I was an executive director and built our place there, a multi-purpose. And if you're there and you take a look at the stained glass windows, who's been there at our place? A lot of you have been there. Yeah. I made all of those stained glass windows. Designed and made all of those stained glass over a 4-year period of my time. So it was one of my little legacies. I love stained glass. I like around here and I like the stained glass around here. I'm always into making stained glass pieces. What I'm going to do today, though, I'm going to share some of the stories of the street, some of the stories that I have, which helps you bring you into the type of, I call ministry on the street that I do, and hopefully I'll do for some. I'm 70 years old now, and Don and I were talking about memory. You know, sometimes my memory is not as good as it used to be when I was 50. But I still want to say that I have young people working for me, and I haven't worked for them, so that's good. I always feel a bit like Gordon Lightfoot up here, eh? You're on the bench. This is a rather hard one. The stories on the street really are stories of the Good Friday world we live in, and it's a rather hard one, but I'll share it with you. It's called Holy Ground. A flood of emotions ran over me like a wave from a violent storm hitting the rocks. I could not contain my emotions any longer. My eyes filled with that salty water and the tears ran down my cheeks. I had known him. Our relationship goes back about 10 years now. Dan was a resident of our place when I was the executive director there. He was born in the city of Guelph, Victoria. He was white, middle class. Dan had graduated from Vic High with all the hopes and dreams and potentials of his peers. It was, however, that same summer, his brother, his mother, and his father were killed in a car accident. He was in the same car, but he never suffered a scratch, at least physically, but emotionally and mentally, he never recovered from that night on the Souk Road. First it was alcohol, then it was drugs, to escape the pain and the deep memories of that day. Dan worked off and on as a laborer. He also got married, but neither relationships lasted long. I first met him, he was on the sidewalk on the corner of Quadra and Johnson, his face in the gutter. He was covered in his own vomit. Cocaine was his drug of choice, better known on the street as the dragon. One chases a dragon for years, but eventually, predictably, the dragon stops, turns its head, and breathes his blue fire on the individual, consuming and controlling that individual from that time on. The dragon is cunning, it's baffling, it's hateful, and it has Dan fully in his grips. It is as powerful as any god that history has invented. Yet, it can bring you to utopia. And yet, when one uses it, they could feel the cold grip of death upon them. I hadn't talked to Dan in months. I would see him from time to time on this corner or that, or he would pedal his BMX in and out of traffic down Quadra Street, going the wrong way, of course. Now and then I'd find him in one of the doorways on Fourth Street, sleeping in the morning. One morning, I was delivering my coffee to the homeless. There was a cold, miserable, agonizing, persistent rain that had prevailed about 3 days in the city. When I first noticed him, he was off to the side, leaning on his bike. As he approached me, he seemed a little shorter than normal. Perhaps it was his drooping shoulder. Perhaps it was his hunched back. Or the fact that his head was between his legs and the rain was dripping off his long, dirty hair. As he spoke to me, his voice trembled. "Rev, can I talk to you before you go?" he asked. It was a haunting voice. It took me a while to finish delivering and serving the others. As I approached him, his voice was the same, a trembling, low voice that demanded my attention. Rev, can you meet me at the corner of Quadra and Cormont at 8 o'clock? I need you to pray with me, he said. Certainly, I said. At that, he got on his bicycle, turned his back to me, and drove off into the traffic. As he disappeared, the rain continued to pour down, heavier than normal, preparing me, I assume, for the human storm which I was about to face a little later in the morning. Later on that morning, I pulled the van up. I finally found parking. And there he was, one knee on the ground, his head between his knees. I got out, I walked up, and we stood in silence. In silence. This congregation is used to silence. Many aren't. It's hard to sit in silence with someone. We sat in silence for a long time. It was as if Mother Earth herself could not stop the agonizing crying. For several moments, it seemed like a decade, we stood there. Why did she do it? He finally yelled out. His voice still trembling. So much pain in that voice, so much intensity. I could feel the weight of the world upon his heart, but remained silent with him. So he could take me through the journey of hell of life itself that only he could travel. How could she just throw our baby in that bush? When my friend saw me, she threw the baby there. I couldn't believe it. 2 days after, I went to the bush. I knelt down. I dug through the bush. And there I found the little baby, blue, covered with flies and bugs. I took off my shirt and I covered his little naked body. And I carried the baby to the police station. They questioned me for 2 hours. Now they're looking for her. She's disappeared. We don't know where she is. Then he pointed at the bush. Rev, that bush. You see that bush? That's holy ground, he said. That's holy ground. It's very important to let a person grieve. It's important that we do not speak. The trouble with us Christians is we rush too quickly to Easter because we're afraid to stand in the Good Friday world and the pain that we face there. I honestly had no strength left. The God that I worship, the trampled down God, the weak God, somehow gave me strength to grab a hold of his hands and kneel there on the corner in prayer with him. We cry out to you, the crucified Christ, the weak, the trampled down Christ. We cry out for your presence, for your cry, for your understanding. We cry out for the baby J, that her life not be in vain. There are no words that can bridge or stop the bleeding of our hearts, but we cry out for Dan and his wife. Hear our cries. Abba, Abba, take this cup from me. We slowly rose from our knees. He still looked to the ground. He walked over to his BMX bike. He got off and he disappeared into the traffic. The coroner's report came about 2 weeks later. We learned that the baby was stillborn, that the mother had delivered the baby in an alley in Victoria, that she carried that baby as long as she could before mentally and physically she couldn't carry it any longer, and she dropped the baby in that bush. She carried it some 14 blocks. I wish I could give you a fairy tale ending here. They're both hooked on cocaine. They're both still on the street. They're still both homeless. They're still under the control of the dragon. Just need a little while to come down off that one, just a few minutes. That story took place just a couple of weeks ago, so it's fresh on my emotion. This is a little happier one. A little. It's called Muddy Holy Water. Muddy Holy Water. I walked along the Inner Harbor in one of the cities of Canada that holds the greatest wealth. I was given a call by the police to go down the Inner Harbor. There was a tent on the Inner Harbor that they wanted me to see who was in the tent and hopefully move the people on before they had to. It was early July. The rain and the cold wind off the Pacific had been persistent for days now. Boy, it's been an awful winter, right? The tourists had long gone, and the Inner Harbor is all but abandoned. If you want to ever really visit the Inner Harbor, visit it now when no one's around, especially on a peaceful day. Oh, the odd, old, large, luxurious yacht was moored in the harbor, and most of its residents, for the most part, sleeping in one of the expensive motels. It's here. Regardless of your political stripe, regardless of what you believe, that one notices a stark difference between the rich and the poor. It can't be ignored there. As I approached the tent, I could see a little light flickering. I announced myself. "Hi, it's Reverend Al. I'm bringing you coffee," I said. A young man unzipped the tent and came out. He was shorter than most, with broad shoulders and large hands and a huge set of hair sprung here and there all over the place. I called it the Einstein look. Following him came a taller man with a particularly long neck and bulging eyes. The third was a young woman, about 25, with long flowing red hair that matched her freckles on her cheeks. But I noticed that she had sad eyes. Most Italian people have a beautiful brown skin, but her skin was pale white. The shorter man spoke to them. They always called me Father downtown. You know, they think I'm a priest or something. "Father, we've heard of you, but we never believed we'd be fortunate enough to meet you. We heard of you first in Montreal by a priest we met there." I worked a while in Montreal over my younger time. "And then we heard of you from a homeless man in Vancouver." The young woman then stepped forward, gave me a hug, and the two men followed. They all had a distinct Italian accent. I knew the accent well, for as a boy I grew up in Ottawa and what is fondly known as Little Italy around Crescent Street. Some of you might know that area. The Italian neighbors were so good to me. My best friend was Americo, and they fed me a lot. And I remember particularly at night, we'd go to the veranda, the grandfather would bring out the accordion, and we'd sing the old songs from the old country. And the neighbors would join in. "Can I help you in any way?" I asked. The tall man answered, "Father, please bless our journey." His bulgy eyes made his request that more innocent. The shorter man interrupted, "How rude of us. We haven't even introduced ourselves to you, Father. I'm Ambrogio. This is my brother Pascalio. And my sister Margherita. We're from Italy." And then they all burst into laughter. Of course you know that, they said. 2 months ago, we left Montreal. We have been in Canada for that time. We leave to see Topino and the Long Beach and the Big Trees tomorrow. Your country is, and I wish I could say this in Italian, Giugiaco. And the taller man interrupted her, "So grand, so big." We work a few days at Labor Unlimited.
to cross the country. We hitchhiked most of the way. But I asked them, why did they choose a rainy season to come to Victoria? Why didn't they come in our nicer season? The young woman spoke up. I have stage 3 cancer. The doctor said I have approximately 6 months to live. When my brothers heard that, they knew that as a child, I always wanted to visit Canada. They stopped work. They bought a return ticket from Italy to Canada and were hitchhiking across the country. They'd given me this gift. I gave them a cup of coffee. I gave them some clean socks. I gave them some new sleeping bags, as their other ones were soaked right through. As I was about to leave, the young woman knelt down on her knees. Father, Father, please don't go without blessing us, she said. With that, I kneeled down beside them in a puddle that was there. God of love, be with the 3 of my friends here on their spiritual journey. Help them discover in every leaf, rock, and ocean, and the surface of the depth of our ocean hue. Help them discover the spirit of our First Nations people as they travel this land. I love page 4. As I bless them, I reach down to the water beneath my knees, that muddy water, and I bless the 3 of them. Okay. This one's an older one, and it's called, where was I? How am I doing in time? Am I close? Am I, how close?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Oh, that's long. You can say a hell of a lot. Oh, you can say a lot in 5 minutes. She was vibrant. A strong woman on the outside, yet if one took the time, if one was really patient, if one really listened over a long period of time, one discovered a frightened child beneath her rough exterior. She was a white woman, about 29. She died of an overdose of heroin recently. Her life was a life of tragedy from the time of her birth to the untimely death. She was born in Victoria, the city of wealth. And that city, our city, has more churches or congregations than most for our size of a city. That's interesting too, eh? Just think of it just for a minute. The city, congregations, empty gymnasiums, empty washrooms, and the poor sleeping on their steps. That doesn't taste well. There's a nice motherhood statement that goes like this. It takes the city to raise a child. There's a sense of truth about that. But in her case, and in many poor children's case, it takes a city to destroy a child as well. Certainly she holds her own responsibility around her life and death. The question is that we must ask ourselves, what responsibility is ours? The church, the provincial government, the federal government. What responsibility is ours of her life? Her mother was a woman of the night, hooked on opium. At the time of Janet's birth, Janet was born in the York Hotel, a rundown rooming house on Johnson Street. No doctors, no midwife, no nurses were called. Her mother did not want Janet to be taken from her. The mother avoided all authorities. Somehow, against all odds, the little baby lived. Its childhood was different than most, moving from one place to another. Always the apartments filled with opium and drugs and cigarettes.
She never went to school. She learned to read from the Muppets on TV. Her mother used to drag her around from this food line to another food line, and that's where her real education came in. But in spite of having no education, this was an extremely bright woman. Her memory was unbelievable. I think she had a photographic memory. I was in court with her one time, and she was charged for the following: possession of heroin for the purposes of trafficking, prostitution, and the possession of a weapon. So those three charges. She didn't trust the police. She didn't trust a lawyer, and she didn't trust the justice system. So she went to the library, spent 3 weeks at the court library. She knew her rights, and she knew where she stood. That day, she walked out of court a free woman against all odds. Janet remembers well her mother's boyfriend coming into her room late at night when her mother was passed out in the other room and had sex with her at age 13. She also remembers being offered opium from that same man that same year. She could hear the bells of the church, of the big Catholic church, ring out joy to the world as she took her first drag of that opium. Janet also remembers being picked up at age 14 by a well-known counselor in our city from the first time she was paid for sex. I met her and her mother that storm of 96, the one that we all talk about, you know, the one where the snow was up to her ankles. I met her in a shelter that we opened, and I would see her from time to time. But I met her most of all when I got to know her in the hospital. She was often in the hospital, and I'd often sit by her bed for hours, and that's where she told me her story. When her mother died, Janet called me. "It's Janet, Reverend Al. Mom's dead." "I'll be right over," I said. "No, I'm going out to get high. I'll see you on Monday." Now I stand at Janet's grave. I bury so many, about two a week. And over this fentanyl thing, it was three or four a week sometimes I was burying. Now I stand at Janet's gravesite. The sun is shining, and I feel the warm summer heat. I sense Janet's spirit as I kneel on the ground, and I ask the internal questions, why? Why? Why was Janet not given one chance in her lifetime? Why was God, and I'm not going to say the word that's here, but why was God silent? Why did she have to suffer her lifetime? Where was the government? Where was the church? And then tears rolling down my face, I ask the harder question, and where was I? Thank you very much. I have more, but, you know, McDonald's is open. Thank you so much. May the words I said challenge you and help you walk your walk in life.